Which is face.
Okay.
Michael Robbins.
Michael Robbins.
Okay. I'll just explain.
No, I'll hand it over to the clerk at this point in time.
Okay.
She has a major announcement to make.
All persons who wish to speak or receive notice of the hearing body's decision recommendation must fill out this form and submit it to me as soon as possible. Copies of this form can be found at the table in the corner. In accordance with the City of Winnipeg Charter and the Development Procedures Bylaw, the process the committee will follow is the applicant will be heard first, followed by those in support of the application. Next, those registered in opposition are heard, followed by those registered for information. Finally, the applicant may return if he, she so desires and speak in rebuttal. It's important to note that when your name is called, it's your opportunity to speak, but you are not obligated to do so. This is a public hearing process brochure, copies of which are available at the registration table. The brochure contains an overview of the process and other information pertaining to what happens before, during, and after a public hearing. As information, all public hearings are digitally recorded and will be part of the public record. Should you have any questions after the public hearing is concluded, please contact the City Clerk's Department at the number listed in the brochure. Item 1 is a rezoning for 124 Harrow Street under file DAZ 202 of 2009. In accordance with the City of Winnipeg Charter and the Development Procedures Bylaw, this is a combined hearing and the following item will also be heard at the same time, namely Item 2, an application to permit the establishment of multifamily dwelling use in an existing residential building under file DCU 10805-2009.
Mel, St. Mark.
I would start with the subject of my applications in respect to 124 Harrow. Then I will explain the reason for the applications. And thirdly, I will speak about the effects on surrounding properties. My last point is on the unique situation and specificity of my property. It will be also my conclusion. I have submitted to the city two applications regarding the property located at 124 Harrow Street. The first application is to rezone my property R2. The second application is for a conditional use for a third suite. The reasons for the applications are based on the long story of the property being a duplex with the occupancy of a third suite, which is called the carriage house. The first official mention of the occupancy dates back to 1919. It was the separate suite used by the chauffeur of 124 Harrow. And I have some documentation that I would like to share with the panel regarding that. There's four copies. And if you look at the last page of the document that you have, the last page of the document, I have highlighted the mention of the back of the last page. I have documented the first mention of 124 Harrow being occupied with the chauffeur of the owner of the house. At that time, no permit was issued to occupy the carriage house. It is my understanding that no permit was required at that time for occupancy of a carriage house. In 1936, a permit was issued to convert 124 Harrow into a duplex. My applications are to make official a long-standing situation. The property will remain absolutely unchanged in relation to past and present practice. I will speak now about the effects on surrounding properties. The applications will have a positive effect on the surrounding properties for the following reasons. The rezoning and conditional use respect the long tradition of the house. They will help to maintain the property without changing it and to bring it to its best possible condition. Since I became the owner of the property, I have been working to restore the glory of this beautiful Georgian-style house that is on the inventory of heritage buildings. Because of the fame of the first owner of the house, the size of the house, and the beauty of its architecture. Furthermore, 124 Harrow is located at a busy corner, and my applications are compatible with Plan Winnipeg. In conclusion, I would like to emphasize the fact that 124 Harrow has a unique history. The carriage house has been used as a suite for 90 years. The history of duplexing the house goes back 73 years. Taking those two facts together makes it clear that the precedent that has been established for this property is unique in Crescent Wood. It is these two situations that I am requesting the city to make official. They are part of the history of Crescent Wood, and this is why many people living in the neighborhood and people who have lived, facing my property for more than 30 years support the two applications, as you can see by the signatures in support of the applications. And this is the signature that I have, so I need copies of them, and I would like to share them with the panel. And this is the original. So if you look at the document, the first signature is from the neighbor closest to the property, and all other signatures are from neighbors that are close. Some of them I put comment, and some of them I highlight the fact that this property has been like it is for many, many years. For all these reasons, I request that you approve my two applications. Thank you.
When did you buy the house?
I bought the house in 2007.
Okay. When you bought the house, that carriage house, I grew up down the block on Yale, so I live intimate with the house. So that carriage house is in the back.
Yes.
What shape was that in when you got it? Was it used?
I believe it was shortly used before I purchased the house.
So it was recently it had been used?
Yes.
And the proposed project, the proposed renovation, just to give myself an idea, you're looking at having three different people. Will you be living in one of the units?
Or? Yes, I'm living on one of the units.
So, and then you have family or rent out the other two to rent it up.
Exactly.
Here. Okay. I think that's about it. It is a beautiful house, and I do agree with you 100%.
You'll be back after we hear the opposition.
Thank you.
Opposition. If I call your name, just indicate if you want to speak or not speak. You don't have to speak.
Is there anyone else in support who would like to speak to the application?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. River Gallo? Can you speak?
Can come up now then to speak?
Well, no, let me go through all the names. Heather Clark?
I'll speak.
You speak? John Guy?
Yeah, I will speak also.
Beverly Pago?
Yes, I'll speak.
You speak? Keith Erickson?
Yes, I'll speak as well.
Mel McManus. You don't want to speak. Okay. Frederick Allen.
I'll defer to Deshaun.
What's that?
I'll defer to Deshaun.
Is there a specific order we need to start?
I can hardly hear you.
Is there a specific order that we need to start?
Well.
Whoever wants to speak up, come first and just state your name and your address. Once you sit down, because it's being recorded. Thank you.
My name is Jean-Guy Pajot.
The 190 Kingsway?
Yes. So before, maybe I'll turn a little bit because we had a hard time to hear before. I also would like the citizens to hear what I'm saying. Before I begin my presentation, what I want to inform the committee, as you probably have guessed by now, that French is my first language. So hence, I want to reserve the right to appeal if I feel that the process has hindered my ability to clearly understand or defend my position. So I want to state that before we start.
It's appealable.
Well, the conditional use is appealable, which is item two.
Right. And the language that is
appealable. Well, if we had known that we wanted French translation previously, we could have provided.
But I will make the presentation in French. So okay. What I do is I will kindly ask the panel to excuse my strong French accent.
Oh. Absolutely. And, we'll ask questions.
So, hello. And it may be difficult, but allow me to state my position as clearly as I can in English.
Okay.
First, R2 zoning does not apply to this home. It is not a two-family residence by use or by law. R2 zoning applies to a two-family home, which is not the case here. R2 zoning does not apply to multiple family homes or rooming houses. The neighborhood is well aware that the past or current owners have rooming house. In fact, I have evidence that I would like to present here that rooms were rented singly and that the home, and that's as of July of this year, has not been functioning as a two-unit duplex. I have an ad from the internet dated May 20, 2009, where single rooms for rent is advertised from July 2009 in September 2009, to the main house, not the carriage house. The behavior is, in my mind, very devious and in conflict with the current zoning well before this evening's hearing. So, on that basis, R2 does not apply and should simply be rejected. The current R1 zoning is the only one officially recognized and must be maintained. Article 22 of the bylaw clearly states that a protected status is granted for uses that lawfully existed prior to the bylaw. One can certainly argue the use never lawfully existed under the R1 zoning for this house. Article 23 of the bylaw speaks of protection of nonconformity. It refers to nonconformity already in existence. To maintain the current zoning is well within the intent of the Article 23. And I cannot reasonably oppose it. However, Article 23 also states that the intent of the bylaw is to permit nonconformity to continue until it is removed, but not to encourage its survival. To allow rezoning goes against the intent of the bylaw. This is exactly why the rezoning cannot proceed, as it encourages the survival of nonconformance, which was always against the desire of the Crescentwood residents, rather than establishing the framework for the removal of the nonconformance toward the original R1 zoning. So the only apparent compromise is to allow the zoning to be R1 with a nonconformity for a time period, I suggest, of 2 to 5 years to return the house to R1, single family house. This would respect the intent of the bylaw and would likely satisfy at least the citizens with the desire to live in a society with reasonable bylaws that are enforced based on their intent. Second point, the legal inferences and theoretical consequences of rezoning based on the so-called grandfather clause are significant and not desirable. The fact that the city did not enforce their bylaw should not be a reason to modify the zoning. It is my understanding also that a grandfather clause applies only to cases where new laws significantly modified already regulated activities. In such cases, the grandfather clause is applied to prevent hardship for an existing regulated situation. 124 Harrow was never conforming to the regulations. Hence, it would appear to me that rezoning based on such grandfather clause is not applicable. Ignoring this important aspect of the law will only set precedents for illegal, unregulated activities to be grandfathered. Police in our neighborhood know that some Kelvin students come to the back lanes on our home to sell drugs. The fact that the city officials and the police are aware of it does not provide a reason for one day deciding that it has been going on a long time and it is now time to legalize the activity. Imagine if we use drivers' behavior regarding speed limits to define the norms. Imagine what would have been the argument for women voting based on this logic. Men could argue that by allowing women to vote, there would be undue hardships, and it would be prevented to have the society they always knew. Grandfather clauses were found unconstitutional in the case of black Americans, as they were merely attempt to reduce citizen rights and prevent the shape of their future. This is almost a parallel in Christendom, because we want to our citizen rights to be listened, and we want to have the right to shape our future according to a single-family residential area. Third, if one decides to ignore my point, my prior point, then one cannot decide when history starts and ends. The applicant clearly talked about 1919 as a critical date, a time where the Enderton caveat was in existence. If a grandfather, if her argument stands and a grandfather clause applies, the great-grandfather of it is the Enderton caveat. I'm sure nobody wants to go there. Ignoring both points would be at best illogical, and in my mind, at worst, a bullying act on the part of the elected representative in order to pass the zoning application. Fourth, inferred consent does not make an act or action legal. Companies have been known to ignore environmental protection laws and put industrial waste in rivers or the air. The fact that the owners of 124 Arrow did not fulfill their obligation as an R1 zone dwelling against the will of the neighborhood, and that the neighborhood did not complain about it, does not represent consent or agreement on the part of the neighborhood. Fifth, to argue that the city administration and city official knew all along about this illegal situation is not, in my mind, to be believed. I personally do not believe that city councilors and city administrators knew about the illegal uses of the house under the city bylaws and decided to turn a blind eye. At best, it would suggest that the city official and elected councilor do not respect the city bylaws. And at worst, it would be a clear demonstration of incompetence. I simply do not believe that the city was not fully aware of the situation. Sixth, it was proposed that income is needed to maintain the historical aspect of the house. One cannot purchase property and ask the neighbors in the city hall to bail them out. If an owner needs cash flow to maintain the property, there are many ways to get it without rezoning. Further, there is no obligation for the owner to reinvest the income in the building. Am I worried that the house would fall apart and not be maintained? Not at all. As long as I can believe that the city will enforce their bylaws, as we are all well protected within the city bylaws against such occurrence. I sympathize with the owner who purchased the home as a commercial enterprise and is stating now that without the income from the upstairs apartment in the garage, she will no longer be able to maintain the property. However, this is not a reason to allow an owner to rezone. She purchased the property fully aware of the cost and the zoning. Seven, the city should not condone undesirable behavioral patterns. To grant the rezoning is in effect condoning undesirable behavior. It will send a message that you can ignore the bylaws as long as nobody complains. For long enough, you will get your way. The fact that the owner did not meet the neighbors to also demonstrate an undesirable behavioral pattern in a civilized society. I have also noticed a distinct flurry of construction activities in the coach house in the last year, more so in the last few months. For the activities to be happening now demonstrates a lack of respect for hearing the current hearing process, the neighborhood, and possibly a lack of respect for the law. My recommendations are: reject the application for rezoning and keep it as R1 with non-conforming status for a limited period of time. limit the parking space to 4 spots. This will discourage a homeowner to use the house for other non-conforming use and will remove the congestion in the back lane. In the spirit of Article 23 of the bylaw, the city should offer a time period between 2 to 5 years to return the home to a single-family home. This would stop encouraging their use of non-conforming status. Fourth, the city should consider penalties for residents, not this owner in person, residents blatantly disrespecting the bylaws. Finally, I want to express my great respect for you, the members of the committee who patiently listened to all this presentation, including mine, or will listen to all the presentation, including mine, especially mine with its funny inflection, missing S's probably. So I also respectfully thank you for not only listening to my position, but hearing my concerns and be willing to consider my recommendations. Thank you.
I am Keith Erickson. I'm a homeowner close by. I haven't put my exact address down.
What's his name?
Keith Erickson.
Okay, got it.
I live just up the street. The long and the short of it is I'm asking you, Mr. Chairman, and you councillors to maintain the status quo. As it stands presently, the zoning allows for a duplex within the existing structure. I don't think any change is merited or needed in this specific circumstance. I do take some exception to the proof that has been proffered that the carriage house has been occupied since 1919. I see nothing in the documentation that's been filed here today to suggest that that's the case. Certainly it seems as though there may have been some residences that have taken up there from time to time, but I do dispute the fact that it has been maintained as a residence for the since the end of the First World War. I pause at this point in time because I have not seen the documentation filed just moments ago by the homeowner, which purports to be proof of signatures of the neighbors around the residence. I would like to look at that as I continue on. Thank you, Council. Now, I pause at this point to talk about the Crescentwood Homeowners Association. The Crescentwood Homeowners Association is a title, I think, given to a former group of individuals that were active in the community at one point. And I'm certainly not drawing any slur on them at present because the individuals, the Greenlaw family who's running it at present, seem to be very nice individuals who are doing this for the benefit of the community. The truth, however, remains that this is not an active organization. 5+ years that I've lived in the Crescentwood area, there has never been a meeting of the Crescentwood Homeowners Association. There has never been any communiques by the Crescentwood Homeowners Association, elections, or anything to give it any air of legitimacy in my mind. That being said, there was a meeting held where the homeowner was present, as well as the Crescentwood Homeowners Association. At that meeting, it was brought to the Crescentwood Homeowners Association's attention that the neighbors were not consulted before a viewpoint was forwarded by the Crescentwood Homeowners Association. At that point, and in good faith, the Crescentwood Homeowners Association representative, Ms. Greenlaw, said, well, we don't withdraw our support, we don't forward our support, we simply remain neutral. And I think that's very important for this council to know, and in fact may present a different scenario for the planner. Now, I also note that they're conspicuous by their absence, which I think buttresses what I'm trying to say here. Now, after listening to the homeowner give a very able presentation both tonight and earlier, I was lukewarm in my opposition. I thought, you know, I don't want to impinge on her right to make a living and have some form of income to support what seemingly is a beautiful house that she's attempting to maintain. She has done repairs, I acknowledge that, and there has been only one significant problem with one of her tenants, which I'm willing, in charitable respect, to write off as perhaps just an anomaly. However, I do note this, that there is no one in person in support of her application. I see before me now what appears to be residents of 172 Kingsway, 105 Harrow, 127 Harrow, and 180 Kingsway. Now, the Van de Waters at 180 Kingsway are close by. They seem to offer their support, but they're not here to learn of some of the new information that we have tonight. The Gibson family at 127 Harrow, I can suggest to you, is a significant distance away, both in sound and distance, as is the other family at 105 Harrow, and the family at 172 Kingsway is also a significant distance away. They would not be the type of neighbors that might be close by and have issues, for instance, if there is loud disturbances in parties. Now, my feeling is always in a situation like this, signatures are important and good to see, but unless you have the bodies in the seats, so to speak, to ask them specific definitive questions and to talk to them about what their understanding is about the house, they are not worth much, candidly. Now, I could be mistaken, but if they felt strongly about it, they should candidly be here as well. Now, I said initially my opposition was lukewarm, and that was the truth. Until very recently, when we were presented with what I see as somewhat definitive evidence that we do not have an individual who is being forthright for this committee. We have an ad placed which effectively says, I am running a large house. I am subletting one room in this house. There should be no mistaking this to be an ad for the carriage house. It talks about 10-foot ceilings. It talks about the use communally of a kitchen, of washing facilities, and these sorts of things. If this individual is before us now talking about the uses that she wishes the residence as well as the carriage house to be made of, I don't think we're being told the complete and forthright right truth in this specific circumstance. And I don't know how we can put faith in this homeowner to go forward and say, yes, we're granting you this extension based on representations you've been given, when those representations don't appear to be forthright in the circumstances. Leaving all of this aside, I do have opposition on another ground, which is simply that this is a very distinct neighborhood in the city of Winnipeg. It is a heritage house, it is a neighborhood of some significance architecturally and otherwise. Any encroachment on that, I think, is something that the council should stand against and maintain specific character of the neighborhood. So those are my comments that I would share with you. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you very much for hearing me.
Thank you.
Should I hand this back to the council?
Sure, thank you.
My name's Heather Clark, and I'm the owner of 151 Harbor, which is about three houses down from the property in question. My husband and I have lived in that property for 17 years and have observed the comings and goings of the property over the years. And all I would like to say is I concur with the comments that Mr. Erickson made. I've made my comments known to Mr. Orlico in a letter to him. And you know, part of the appeal of us buying a house in that neighborhood is the fact that these are historical homes, and we were under the understanding that the neighborhood was to be a single-family use neighborhood, and rightly or wrongly, we were under the impression that any homes that are multiple-family are allowed to retain as such, but if they ever reverted back to single-family, they would stay as such as single-family. So my concern with this application is that it would set a disturbing precedent that has the potential to alter the flavor of the neighborhood forever. And simply my biggest concern and the biggest impact that our family has had personally is the noise and the parking. There are a number of cars parked in the back lane. The spots are not really big enough for an average-sized car in the winter. They're stuck out into the back lane, and with that number of cars parked in the back lane, there's a tremendous amount of traffic, and we've had small children over the years, and the additional traffic in the back lane has been a serious safety concern for us. So those are my comments.
Any questions?
Thank you. Thanks.
Beverly Pageau. I live at 190 Kingsway, which is directly opposite the carriage house. My carriage house and the carriage house in question face one another. I believe the chauffeurs probably were friends back in 1919, but we don't rent our carriage house out. So it's been mentioned that this property is located on a busy corner. At the side, at the front, I guess it's front, it's a busy corner. In the back, it's the single family homes that interact with the supposed families that live there. So although it's a busy corner in the front, which again, I guess the argument then is that you can have lots of people and parties and noise, it doesn't matter, but the same people and parties and noise at the side are also being affected, are also being felt at the back. Certainly the people that moved out the day that the signs went up, they moved out of their home, they would certainly tell you that there was lots of parties and noise. Single family homes can have parties and noise as well. I realize that, but the more people you get, the more single rooms that you're renting out, the younger people you're going to have, and believe me, you wouldn't want my teenagers living in my house without my supervision. So I just think that the home does not fit in to the neighborhood. You also mentioned that the owner lives there now, which is great. And in the last couple of years, there's been a lot less noise, and it's been much better. However, the zoning goes with the property, not the owner. So my concern is that this responsible owner may move out, and when we moved into the property, an owner that did not live there looked after the property, and that's when we had the most problems. It's a well-known party house. In the medical community, it's known as a party house. I thought it was a frat house until I learned what it was. When I think of R2, I think of, you know, we came from Toronto, we lived in a semi. There was one family on one side who owned that part, and there was another family on the other side that owned that part. To me, that would be perfectly fine, and it would fit into the neighborhood fine. But R2 in this circumstance is not two families. It's one single woman who bought the property as a commercial property to rent it out and use it as a business to earn money. That type of activity does not fit in to the rest of the environment, which is an R1 single family home with kids and dogs and quiet. So that's my view of it. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
Frederick Allen, I live at 181 Frederick Allen. Yes, sir. I live at 181 Kingsway, which is across the street from the lane that holds the house in question. I guess I won't sort of take up too much time, just a reiteration of some of the other information passed. I just have a feeling that changing from R1 to R2 in this neighborhood is the thin edge of a wedge. There are several houses in that area that are classified on the assessment rolls as duplexes. Once you allow one to convert, it's going to open up the doors to whoever may own the house later on. The fact that the conversion from R1 to R2 goes through the property, not with the person, makes it very difficult for me to sort of understand why we would allow that to happen in such a nice neighborhood. I guess I'll just leave it there. Thank you.
And then we have for information.
We'll just ask, is there anyone in opposition whose name is not called out who wants to speak? Seeing none, go ahead.
Okay. Edwin Lowe. Okay. For information.
You're listed as for information. Do you want to be marked as in opposition?
In opposition.
In opposition? I'll change that then.
Do you want to speak?
No.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Then we'll have the applicant come forward again.
Yes, I have acknowledged that there is opposition to the applications, but I don't think it's significant people that are in opposition. There are people, there are couples, so they're believed to one house, so it's lower the number. Also, there's been information that I think that are not accurate that was being said to the panel. The first one, that it's a rooming house. It is not a rooming house. It's a duplex. I'm living in one side. On the other side, everyone has the right to be together. They can be three and rented a house and leave the house. There are no locks in a rooming house. Has a lock on every door. None of my tenants have locks on their door. They're buying together. It's one lease. And so I want to make sure that you understand that. And the fact that also one thing that was said, that R2 does not apply to this house. It was their official permit that was issued to this house to be R2. It said that R2 does not apply to this house, but the house has a permit to be not R2, but in fact to act as R2. And it's official, there's a permit for that backs a long time ago. But I just want to emphasize the fact that 124 Harrow is a unique house for several reasons. There are no houses that has the same history, the same long history of being occupied by three families as in the neighborhood as 124 Harrow. So I don't think it will set a precedent in the neighborhood, because it's impossible, because they could not find a similar house with similar history in the neighborhood. So the 124 Harrow is unique, and I think this is the fact that the panel should be focused on the fact that it's the rezoning that I'm requesting for, and the conditional use that I'm requesting for, are a specific answer to a unique and specific situation. And yes, I just want, I forgot that which was important. I want also to mention the fact that a zoning officer inspected the carriage house, and he was acting also as a VF or as a building officer at the same time. And he inspected the house, and they didn't find anything to say that this house was not cannot be occupied by a person. It was maintained all over the years since the house was built, almost, to be occupied. So and when he inspected it, he didn't find anything that can say that this is not a suite that could not occupy. So that's why they give me the opportunity to officialize the situation.
Just a few. The carriage house is in question. You're doing renovations presently, I've heard.
It's
right?
In the garage. It's in the
garage. I know that's actually the building. The square footage, or you say it's a garage, but it's not used as a garage anymore, obviously.
It's in the garage in the
main floor?
Main floor, and mm-hmm. the top of it.
So how many square footage are you looking at the carriage house room?
I could speak more I would say it's about 600 square feet.
What is your, presently, the parking issue? How many stalls do you have?
Thank you very much for asking that question, because I've noted that energy. The parking, I have a regular and it is made in the back lane to be a parking lot, so it's filled with gravel. The size of it is the same size as the wall of the house, and it can handle in winter 5 vehicles, plus 2 vehicles that I could put in the garage, which is a double car. So I have space for seven vehicles. In the winter, of course, because of the snow, it's five, but in summer I can easily put six cars in the back of the house, plus the two that I can put in the carriage house. And this is one thing also that I want to mention. I didn't have to fill any application for variance. If the house was not fit in terms of parking, if there were not enough parking, two parking per unit, there was, which I believe this is what I'll allow, what is necessary for each unit, two parking stall, the city of Winnipeg would have requested me to fill up a variance also. But I didn't have to fill up any variance because it's all requirements in terms of parking are met with the house in its existing form.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just to clarify, just another point. So we have one family presently on one side, then the co-op or the group of students or whatever you have on the second side.
Yes.
They do share a kitchen. They share a washroom.
No, they don't share a washroom.
Yeah,
there's
own
three
washrooms
in the.
It is a big house.
Yes, it's a big house. There's five rooms. Some of them can use two rooms, one as office, the other one as the bedroom. It's a big house.
Okay. But they do share the kitchen, and they share the main common. What else do they share in this group? Is there a main living room space? Is there a dining room?
There's a dining room. There's a dining room. There's a living room in the house.
For one side.
For the we call it the A side.
A side.
For A side, and I'm on the B side.
You're on the B side.
On the
A side, where these students are living, they have.
They are not students.
Or whoever they are. They
yes.
say tenants.
Yes, tenants. Right. We call them tenants.
Tenants. But these tenants are living. There is a living room. On their side, there's a living room and a dining room.
On their side.
And then they have their own washroom, share a kitchen.
Yes, there's, okay. I don't know how they share the washroom, but there's one.
There's a washroom for
yes.
each, and then they have two rooms.
Yes.
Okay, so, okay. When do we have the staff after?
Well, we could ask the staff after. Are you just asking?
Oh, yeah, I'll be asking staff after.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry.
It's fine.
And yes, also that the zoning inspector, when he inspected the house, it was clear that it was not a rooming house. It was operating as duplex. One family, two families on each main side, plus the carriage house.
Just a follow-up question. I'm not sure if you were aware when you moved into the neighborhood that there's a very long history of some very strong opinions keep this neighborhood as an R1, never go to an R2. And
yes.
Were you aware of that?
Yes, I'm aware of. It's something that I know that the neighborhood was zoned R2, R1. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Was zoned R1.
Yeah, because the
and,
history.
And that also, what I know is the fact that the opposition is more to new duplexing or creating new duplexes. If the duplex has been existing like that. The neighborhood seems to accept the fact that it was, you know, converted into a duplex a very long time ago, and it's like that. It's part of the neighborhood to be like that. But the opposition is for new,
right.
For new duplex, not existing.
Sure. Well,
not
some. That's true to a degree. Some people, I would argue, want all the duplexes gone too. But again, that's not what we're here today. I'm just saying there is some strong views, and you're aware of that. Which leads me to my question. Was there any attempt by yourself to consult with your neighbors, to do a public meeting with them? Any form of that occurred at all?
I consulted before I did that. I consulted the Crescent Wood Homeowner Association.
Okay. So
I
good
consulted
faith,
them.
Good faith,
yeah,
you thought
at
that
the
was
beginning,
good.
Very at the
yeah.
beginning, I spoke to them and asked them what was their the view on that, and it was clear from them, they haven't changed their view on that, that they were okay with that.
Okay.
They feel very okay with that, the fact that it was with the application of rezoning and a third suite, because it was part of the history of the house.
Okay. That's nothing your problem. He, in good faith, he did try to consult, so that's fine. Thank you. That's good for me. For me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Questions still for Michael, if I may.
Okay, sure.
So, I guess my main question, Michael, is why does this need to be rezoned if it's just been grandfathered? Why do we need to set the argument? Obviously, as we know, is we can debate that if precedent is being set or is this a one-off thing. But why are we having to have this debate when it is a grandfathered property?
Just so we're clear, the duplex, the principal structure, is grandfathered in. The carriage house has no rights currently. So if this application is rejected, the result would be that they would be able to carry on with the duplex, and they would not be able to have someone living in the carriage house.
May I inquire why? It does sound like there's some history that the carriage house was occupied throughout history and in the recent past. Why wouldn't it be grandfathered as well?
Very good question. My understanding, and I spoke with the zoning enforcement officer who's followed this, there was a complaint to the city that somebody was illegally occupying the carriage house. The city went out to investigate it and confirmed that there was somebody living there, and went back and looked at paperwork to see whether there had been any permits issued, any occupancy permits for the carriage house. Seeing none, the zoning department confirmed that the applicant would have to make this application in order to legally establish that carriage house.
Okay, so just to clarify from my head here, so therefore, but it was occupied. The inspector, or the history does say that the building at one time, carriage house, was occupied. Is that
the dispute? I don't have any evidence of that. I'm just going on just the word of the applicant who's in the.
But even people who opposed the project also mentioned that it had been occupied.
Regardless of that, the way the zoning department looks at it is, does the city have any occupancy permits in their records which show that it was legally established? And there are no records of that happening. So then the zoning department has to assume that it was never legally established. And this application is to rectify that situation and to bring it into conformance with the rules. But it's possible that there was a permit, but we're talking about 1919 here, and the city has no records of that.
Furthermore, to the issues of parking. So you've reviewed the parking. When you review the parking issue, were you looking at with inclusion of the carriage house, so for required parking, or was that just on the duplexes by itself?
I can confirm what the applicant said with just a slight modification. The city requires 1.5 parking stalls per unit, so for this property they would require 5.
Right.
And so when the city was reviewing the plans, the zoning department confirmed that they had in excess of 5 parking stalls, so no variances.
Is there a problem in our bylaws when, in a case like this, where we look at something of number of units, where we know that in a situation which is, you know, can happen in these duplexes, where it's actually not 3 units, 6 units, because you're renting out rooms?
This is, an interesting twist. It sounds like the flavor of it is more like a rooming house, though technically, under our bylaws, it may not be called a rooming house.
Right.
It sounds like the flavor of it is if they're renting out individual. So, this is the first that I've heard of that.
I can assume by that then it hasn't really been taken into account with the parking, because we don't really, you just heard about it now. So,
but still the bylaw is very, very black and white. It says if you have one dwelling unit, it's 1.5 parking stalls per unit.
Yeah, and that's why we're here, because we're the gray.
Right.
Yeah, so this is one of the gray areas, so I understand that.
Can I just ask a question? I'm confused. Like, it sounds like a rooming house, and I don't understand how that's just sort of allowed. Like, it certainly shouldn't, if that's true, and there's quite a bit of evidence given to us today that it is true. Is that an enforcement issue? Like, or how does that fit into this hearing today? If that is in fact going on, I mean, I feel pretty uncomfortable, you know, saying that's okay, go ahead and have a rooming house in the middle of Crescentwood.
It changes the dynamics of this application quite a bit, because if it is verified by the city that it is in fact a rooming house, then we're having the wrong applications here. They would need to apply to rezone the property to a multiple family district and do a conditional use for a rooming house.
Maybe one suggestion, this is just an idea, I mean, I don't know if you've already come to a decision, but one option is to defer this decision until they go out and check this out and see if this is a valid application. I mean, is any harm going to come if it waits till September to finish going through this process? I mean, there already is an existing use, so it doesn't really change anything. Because, I think we need to get at the crux of whether this is a rooming house or a house or a duplex.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to jump on what our bylaws are, because I'm still 4 months into the job. However, my understanding, when I had a similar situation where I was personally involved in on my street, where they rented a house out to individual rooms, and the bylaw inspector did go to that place and said, no, it's not a rooming house because it has no locks on the doors. And that's the key criteria.
So how does that make it not a rooming house if you have 6 or 8 different people living there and you don't have locks on the doors? How does that make it not a rooming house? I don't follow this.
There's a lot of gray area in this, and sometimes it's very difficult for the city to prove that something is a rooming house. So one of the standards that the city looks at is locks, because then that's clear evidence that the people who are renting out these rooms are unrelated to each other. Otherwise, you could have a bunch of college students that are known to each other who are renting a place together.
That's right.
And who each have a room and share a kitchen and a washroom. That's very common, you know, around the university. So one of the points the city looks at, and recently we shut down a rooming house on Bannerman, the evidence that the city used in court to shut that down was that there was locks on each of the individual.
Okay, but if you've got an ad advertising a room that we have as evidence in front of us right now, then I don't feel that that's been adequately investigated. Without that, like, I'm just wondering what mechanism we would have to deal with that before we go ahead with any kind of approval here, because I think that needs to be clarified. That, I mean, somebody maybe have found a loophole to set up a rooming house in the middle of a
R1 area. If that's the direction that the committee decides to go, I would have no objections forwarding this to zoning enforcement and having them